What do you know? Do you know enough to pass the citizenship test given to immigrants applying for U.S. citizenship? Okay, here's a question for you.
Well, we should all know that the Bill of Rights is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. So what is in the First Amendment? The First Amendment has 5 parts. You may recognize the first 4, the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press, the freedom to peacefully assemble. But what is the 5th one? So today we will be talking about that right, which is the right of people to petition the government for redress of grievances. Stay tuned.
This is Louisa Beale with Radio Tacoma, and I have the pleasure of sitting with 2 lovely people, Devin Kelly, who is in the race for the 27th Legislative District, and Malachi Betor, mm-hmm. who lives in the 27th yes. Legislative District. And so we're here to talk about, I mean, there are so many things we could talk about, but the one today that I have a lot of questions about is with the recently passed law about the Home in Tacoma for All. And if I understand it right, Devin, you were instrumental in that campaign. Is that true?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I was one of the steering committee members with Tacoma for All and the folks behind Initiative One. Really lucky and happy to have been involved with a really wonderful coalition of people from many organizations and many backgrounds. But I was one of the central steering committee members behind it pretty much from day one of the initiative process.
Mm-hmm. So when did that start?
Yeah, so that's interesting. You know, we could look at it from the lens of the initiative itself, but I think it would be important to situate it in kind of the broader fight for housing justice in Tacoma. And it really emerged out of the Housing Justice Working Group of the local Democratic Socialist of America chapter, who had been working on different housing justice projects for a number of years. Specifically, were some of the folks behind getting our extended kind of notification and just cause ordinance passed a number of years ago with the Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee and other folks. But we really started things up when we were trying to influence the Home in Tacoma process, and we originally named ourselves Home in Tacoma for All, wanting to say that we support a rezone and we support density, but under the terms that it must provide affordable housing, it must not displace community members that already live there, particularly Black and Brown and low-income residents throughout Tacoma, and that it can't just be a giveaway to developers. And it was a strange situation where we were kind of on the same side as the developers and landlords were saying we want a rezone, but for totally different reasons. And we tried influencing the city to include a lot of things around tenants' rights, mandatory affordability, stuff that's been won in other cities and other processes over the last few years, including a fight I was involved in Seattle. And they didn't do any of it. And we decided that we would try to advance an initiative and go directly to voters. And it turned out at the same time that the city had been convening a stakeholder group about their own modification to the rental housing code. And kind of our signature gathering process and their last few months of convening that stakeholder group kind of ended up happening at the same time, but leading to very, very different results.
Did you have a question, Malachi?
I did want to ask, have you been contacted by other cities on how to do this?
Yeah, actually. So folks in Olympia are trying to run an initiative right now called Olympia for All. Folks have created organizations with similar ideas and names in other municipalities in Washington. When I was telling friends in Oregon about it, one of my best friends said, oh, let's do Eugene for All. So I think there's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm around renters' rights and tenants' rights and building tenant power in different places right now.
I understand that it's mostly to keep people housed so that they can stay where they're living now. But I'm also curious about the zoning to allow more small businesses around. You know, not to have apartment buildings that are off in the distance and everybody needs a car to get to a grocery store, that kind of thing. Is that part of it?
I mean, it's not part of the Initiative One process, not really, but it's a thing that we advocated for strongly, right? Like walkable, dense neighborhoods that don't displace. So I think you can have zoning that does not lead to just a bunch of apartments that kick people out. I think that actually kind of the North Slope area of Tacoma is very much like that. Mm-hmm. So it's mixed residential, small multifamily, small business, even light industrial. And it's actually kind of beautiful and really interesting. And it feels like a diverse, kind of integrated, interesting neighborhood with different styles of living and different styles of community. And I think that that's a thing that could be done on a very large scale. You just have to have the willingness both by, you know, single family homeowners and the municipality and developers. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it takes, I think, real community coalitions to push to have housing done in a way that's really just and equitable for people that already live somewhere. It's a bit of a jump from kind of initiative one, but yeah, I think it's very important stuff.
I was just
kind
of curious
stuff.
If it was part of the whole thing. So right now, Home and Tacoma for All is holding workshops for tenants. And what's going on in those workshops?
Yeah, so, you know, this is something that I'm really proud of. The very first one was a few weeks ago at the Fernhill Library, and I wasn't able to make it, but something like 30-something tenants came, and a couple folks from Tacoma for All were facilitating. And it was really about informing them around their rights under Initiative One. So, you know, specifically what we were able to pass around extending the length of time that landlords have to let tenants know about rent increases, around their rights for not being evicted in the school year if their parents are school kids or their teachers, their rights to not be evicted in the winter at all, and capping move-in fees. And also how they can then go about acting on and defending those rights. We're really happy to see that the county commissioners have decided to interpret the law as a protection against evictions, meaning that the tenants don't necessarily have to bring up a defense, but they have to know how to advocate for themselves. So teaching them what the language of the law says, getting them access to pamphlets and materials, telling them how they can work through the legal system to keep themselves protected and hold their landlords accountable. One thing that I think a lot of people don't like about the law, but that I love about it, is it gives tenants the rights to take their landlords to court if they violate it. And, you know, we're finding it's not really happening in small scales where it's just one or two units, but it gives tenants the opportunities to really take on slumlords or private equity folks that are trying to gouge people, you know, or rent-evict people. And so we've had a number of those workshops, and we're planning to do a lot more. There's been ideas about doing them in different environments, you know, community centers, high school classrooms. And it's a really exciting opportunity to see how much tenants want to keep themselves housed, know their rights, organize with their neighbors to keep the community they love.
There was a great deal of misinformation. I mean, I have to say, I thought this was a really dirty campaign on the opposition side. I would drive down, there would be signs up for Home and Tacoma for All, and the next day they would all be gone. There were signs that people had written, put swastikas on them. There was a lot of misinformation out there. A lot of older widows who have one rental are, oh, this is going to be terrible for me. And it kind of came off as if once this was passed, nobody had to pay rent anymore.
Yeah.
That's quite a misunderstanding.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that the landlord lobby ultimately outspent us 3-1. And it's been interesting because there's some people in the community that say that we barely squeaked by and we barely won. And it's a really interesting framing when you think that these really powerful state and national interests put in hundreds of thousands of dollars, so the most ever spent on a local initiative, and one of the most spent on a race in the area of any type, electoral initiative otherwise. And these very same PACs that were backed by out-of-state investors, that were backed by the National Association of Realtors, who are in a deep scandal right now, and the Washington State Multifamily Association, their argument was that passing this was going to hurt small landlords who would lose, you know, the ability to collect the rent, to pay their bills, pay their mortgage, pay for upkeep, and that these big national interests would come in and gobble up their properties. But they actually represent the national interests, really, at the end of the day. Or they say they represent small landlords. I remember I was in a debate with them, mm-hmm. with my co-leader, Ann Dorn, back in, I think, September or October. And we were debating someone who called himself a small landlord. And it was later revealed he owned dozens of units, right? So what even constitutes a small landlord? But the misinformation was powerful, right? There was this kind of right-wing, very creepy side to it. There was obviously the swastikas. You know, I'm not going to say the swastikas are the result of the landlord campaign. I don't think that's true. But I think that they did stoke a lot of fear and anxiety. And when people have a lot of fear and anxiety, it's easy to prey on that. And on the campaign trail for my own election right now, I've ran into people on the doors that claim to be really progressive people, and I believe they are, who think that this is a terrible initiative, we did a terrible job. And over the course of the conversation, it comes out that they're a landlord, and also that they just heard a lot of propaganda, and they themselves aren't fully informed about how it works. And I think it's actually on the city and on the city to provide voters and community members with information about their rights. And it's one of the areas where we're stepping in, we're having to step in. And I think when people hear and learn about how it actually works, it makes a lot more sense to them.
I would think that the small landlords would be least affected because they tend to rent to people that they know or people that have a long history. Full disclosure, I'm a landlord.
I'm a recovering landlord. So
okay. I'm a landlord too.
Would that be a landlady?
Oh.
Well, a land person. But we had multiple people in our leadership or major donors, major supporters that are all landlords too, right? It's dangerous to kind of reify everyone as one single group. But sure, you know, landlords have slightly different interests than renters in general. But it doesn't mean you can have to be a terrible person to be a landlord. You can try to make it work. And my friend Bill Hannawalt was on our steering committee with us, and he's a small landlord in Hilltop. And it's a more diverse, complex situation. The propaganda lets it on to be, you know.
So what are the first rights that were won? Can you just list the rights again?
Yeah. So, you know, we extended the window of notification that landlords had to give from rent increases up to 6 months, which I think some people are very chagrined about, but you should be able to be.
It's a business. You're supposed to be able to, you know, prepare for the future.
That's the way it is. That's just good business acumen, you know. And we made it forbidden to evict families with school children in the winter, as interpreted by the commissioners. I want to say it that way because I think there's been some disagreement about how that language works, but that's what the county commissioners have decided, which is great. And protecting anyone from getting evicted in the winter, and protecting families of school kids from getting evicted in the school year. And I think this is crucial. I work in education in my day job at the Foundation for Tacoma Students, and I know as a fact, and I've been saying this on the campaign trail, I moved every year in my life when I was a kid. It was very disruptive to my well-being, my mental health, my attendance. And we see this in the data all the time. And in Tacoma Public Schools, we have over 2,000 students that are McKinney-Vento, which means they're either homeless or near homeless status. And even if they have mobility in the summer, it's not nearly as bad as having to move during the school year. So I think it's not only a question of the rights of those parents to keep themselves and their kids housed, but of real long-term outcomes and stability and well-being for those young people. And of course, there's cascading results around that. Tacoma, when we think about disengaged youth and youth violence and all the things that are happening, if you don't have stability, you don't have much else at all.
Right. And it costs a lot of money to move. I mean, it costs thousands of dollars to move.
It costs thousands of dollars. So one of the key things in the initiative that we haven't talked about much yet is that if landlords raise the rent over 5%, they are required to offer to pay for rental relocation. So if it's between 5 and 7.5%, it's 1 month. If it's 7.5 to 10%, it's 2 months. And if it's over 10%, it's 3 months, I think. I don't have the data right in front of me, but I'm fairly certain those are the numbers. And it, you know, puts tenants in a position to have a little more bargaining power and to be able to buy if they have to go out in the market. But also it should dissuade landlords from raising the rent too much. You know, people moving in and moving out is disruptive to everybody. Like, landlords want predictable income, predictable renters, and renters sure as heck want to stay housed and don't want to go homeless, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we believe that having that extra padding and that extra defense makes tenants in a much safer position in terms of their well-being and disincentivizes landlords from kicking them out because, you know, you make the choice. And if you do that, you're going to have to pay up. And if you don't pay up, the tenant can take you to court, which is great. Yep. Landlords take tenants to court all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So it sounds to me like it's almost like a lease situation instead of just a straight month-to-month rental situation. But the lease terms come from this initiative. Am I off base there?
No, it does. It affects the terms of which a rental agreement and a lease work, for sure. 100%. Yep. That's the primary way in which it operates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not a silver bullet. It's not perfect, but there's some data being collected right now. We're very excited to see what it does. I think that the county commissioner's interpretation around the evictions being a ban is really, really helpful and really helpful for working people and tenants.
So is this a county law, or is this a city law?
It's a city law, but the county commissioners are luckily interpreting it for the city. With evictions here, the sheriff is required to carry them out, which is a really interesting thing, especially because we have a bunch of different municipalities, right? So that the city has to work with the sheriff's office and the court system. It's actually rather complicated, but you know, they're choosing to obey what voters decided on, which is great.
That's what it's all about. So this is a perfect example. When people who don't think they have power get together and work together, they can accomplish something. And I think that's very encouraging.
Because, you know, so often I've heard in the past, oh, well, you know, it doesn't apply to me, or, oh, well, there's nothing I can do about it. You can't fight City Hall, you know, those kinds of attitudes. And that helps no one.
Yep. Apathy is understandable and also very dangerous.
Yeah.
And I think people in Tacoma right now are very excited to see the wins for Jamika Scott, the wins for Come For All and Initiative One. We also won the creation of the non-police crisis response team, the HOPE team, which is a result of a lot of community organizing. I felt really lucky to be involved with that as well. And I think that there's a sense among working folks of all different backgrounds, all different ethnic and racial and demographic groups and ages, that if they come together and fight, they can really improve conditions. And, you know, that's what I'm campaigning for the state legislature on as well. And really extending a lot of these victories here, both in terms of what else can we do, but also in terms of the like policy pieces and specifically really around housing.
So what's next for Home in Tacoma For All? Do they have more initiatives that they're planning on?
Yeah, there's obviously a great wave of, you know, tenant education and tenant information happening right now. And really good discussions about next steps for a big initiative process to win things for working folks in Tacoma. I don't think I'm in a position to share a whole lot of details on the radio.
Okay.
But they're very exciting, really powerful conversations with a really good coalition. And we're not going anywhere. We're in the fight to win around housing and around, you know, all sorts of things that affect working people here.
I've been thinking about alternative housing situations. Like for, you know, in Chicago, I know for years, unions had buildings that they would rent to their members. And when my mother was going to school as a nurse, a nursing student, she was given housing to get through nursing school. But it seems like everything has just been privatized and we don't hear about those things anymore.
Yeah, we don't. I have a lot of ideas about those things.
Okay.
But I think...
Not ready to talk about it yet.
No. Okay. I'm actually happy to talk about some of it. I feel like it's really important that we figure out how to dramatically expand the permanently affordable housing stock. And I say it that way because there's just so many weird incentive programs around giving developers a tax break if they make something affordable for a few years. And if they sell the property, the affordable carve-out goes away or whatever. And we see what happens with it over and over again. And yeah, I've heard great stories about union-provided housing in the past or, you know, university-provided housing that was at a deep discount or free. And I think that we need to return to those kind of models. And I also think that, you know, we need a few simple fixes around the stock and permanent affordable housing. The first, of course, is to, in Washington, lift the ban on rent stabilization. So I'm a huge supporter of Senator Yasmin Trudeau's last couple bills. I will make that a priority if I'm elected. And I think that's a great way to keep working people housed. But I also think we need really innovative kind of experimental ways of thinking. I support a social housing developer that, you know, has the bonding authority to build market rate housing to help subsidize affordable housing. And you can build thousands and thousands of units really quickly that way. I also support having a state bank and having a state bank, doing investment in housing. It can do investment in housing like multifamily and social housing, but it also can do some really cool stuff. Like one thing we've been kicking around is what if, you know, one of the things that comes up with affordable housing is you have these like older white homeowners that don't want apartments in their neighborhoods or don't want their view ruined. But a lot of them are retirees or want to age in place and also face many of their own financial constraints. So what if they got like zero or low interest loans to convert their house, their huge house, to a duplex or a triplex on the condition that they offer rent stabilized rent, you know? So it's like shared housing with very much, very little hit to them financially. And then they know the people they live with, their neighbors or friends. And it can be a fully regulated thing. So you could, there's a lot of trust involved, you know, you bring in some college students or whatever. And it's a benefit for everybody. It's a really exciting benefit for everybody. And we just need to think a lot more about these different ways to, you know, bring everyone along while we expand housing and affordable housing for all.
Yes. Well, that's very exciting.
Is there anything you'd like to add before we close up here?
Just that, you know, I think that things can seem really difficult and really hard, and we see how intense things are right now with the housing market and with homelessness and precarity. And, you know, we won this big victory recently, but I think some people are worried that it doesn't go far enough, or that, you know, we can't see the proof of it yet. And I think it's about these kind of struggles are about the long haul and are about being in it together and believing in kind of like a how we reimagine the world in a different way. And I've just been really excited about the people that have stepped up for To Come For All. I'm excited for folks to step up for my campaign. And I think that, you know, we're in a real moment for housing justice and the broader kind of social justice movement in Tacoma. And I hope folks are feeling inspired and in it to win it.
So to get in touch with Home in Tacoma For All, how would they do that?
Yeah, so the website is www.tacoma4all.org. And you can write to info@tacomaforall.org. There's also social presences on Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, at Tacoma For All.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. We've been listening and having a conversation with Devin Kelly, who is a candidate for the 27th Legislative District in Tacoma, and Malakane Bator, who is with Radio Tacoma, along with myself, Louisa Beal, and Radio Tacoma, KTAHLP. We are low power to the people.
I love that. Low power to the people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In our discussion, Devin pointed out that there was some misunderstanding of what the Home in Tacoma For All would do. Much of this was instilling fear in people. So I would like to add a note about the slippery slope fallacy. In discussions at a city presentation detailing the Home in Tacoma For All, one landlord cited a new rule that landlords cannot evict tenants between November 1st and April 1st. They asked, "What's to stop all tenants from not paying their rent?" Now, this is a slippery slope argument. A slippery slope fallacy is a type of argument that anticipates a series of cause and effect events without any logical evidence for its premises or conclusions. For example, proponents of looser gun laws often argue that any restriction on gun ownership will lead to a complete ban on all firearms, causing citizens to lose their right to protect themselves. In this slippery slope example, the premise of gun safety laws does not lead to the conclusion that we cannot protect ourselves. And for landlords, a tenant's bill of rights does not mean that tenants will not pay their rent. It just gives tenants a bit more say in how they are treated. It gives them a little bit more power. Power to the people, right?